You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
That's a gay-ass podcast.
What? That's a gay-ass podcast.
What?
A really, really, really gay podcast that we call That's a Gay-Ass Podcast.
That's a gay-ass name for a gay-ass podcast.
Welcome back to That's a Gay-Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It is me, Eric Williams, and this week's guest
is Evan Mulrooney.
Which, if you have not seen his videos, pause this. Pause this and go click on the first link in the description. I'll wait. Okay, you're back. Now you've seen how hot he is, how insane he is, hilarious, gorgeous, unwell he is. But you're probably asking yourself the question, is he fruity? Well, I asked that question and many more in this interview, but if you want the horniest, most invasive questions, we've got a 10-minute extended interview over at Substack, also linked in the description below. So please buckle up for this yummy ride. Evan Mulrooney is on That's a Gay Ass Podcast, and you have a lot of explaining to do. Evan, are you ready for my girthy, tough questions?
Oh my God, give me all the girth. I'm so dilated for you. I'm prepped.
And I can tell that the stool you're sitting on is completely inside of your body. And for that, packing. I'm grateful you did the preparation for That's a Gay Ass Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
It is a gosh darn honor. In fact, Evan, we have a lot of listeners who are big fans of yours, and I want to get immediately into my gay journalism hat. Evan, you post a lot of gay-coded shit, but people want to know the truth. Are you on the LGBTQ spectrum? And if you are, what letter? What's the journey? Evan, give it to us straight.
I wanted to do a bit, but I'm not going to. I am a queer. I identify as pansexual, and I'm having the time of my life. And I think about that all the time. Of like, especially I'm doing a Grindr collab. Of like, what kind? With the audacity of a straight guy to be like, yeah, I'll take money from Grindr. Yeah.
No, that's why it's so funny. I actually wrote down a comment that someone did on your Grindr
ad. Please.
Someone commented, wait, I thought he was an ally. Turns out he's a really good ally, which I don't know if the implication is that you are just so accepting of gay people that you're a straight guy doing a Grindr ad. But no, you have fucked with the D is what you're saying.
Oh, my God. So many. And I, you know, to get... I hope it becomes that. I hope it becomes so muddied in terms of allyship that it's like, does it matter? I don't know. I don't care. I'm not saying that identity isn't important and it's not important to project out and be authentically who you are. But like, boy, wouldn't that be a dream? And that's kind of the goal of all this, of like,
yeah.
I'm trying to get to the straights and say, hey guys, it's all right. For a long time, before I really found that I really resonated with pansexual, I just identified as queer. And I said, to be a queer man is just to be an honest man. Mm. And to say, I wonder what that's like. And then trying it and going, oh, cool. I very, very much like that.
do think, though, that you're weaponizing in the most positive way your ability to straddle all the lines. And I do mean straddle. Because if there are people who think you're straight, but you're showing that it's okay to be silly and maybe show your perky ass and hairy tits and not take yourself so seriously. I feel like straight men have been told, if you act anything other than a fucking straight dude, then you're less of a man. And you're saying, actually, I'm more of a man because I love dick.
But
can we define pansexual for any listeners who want to know? Or how does Evan define pansexual? Does that mean you're just like dating and fucking any thing that feels good to you? Or is there a better way of describing that?
Yeah, and it's all things. I say, come here, you thing. It's just objectifying everything. Pansexual is being attracted to the person. It's more, as my therapist would say, hearts, not parts. And my other friends would say, I strongly disagree with that. It's all parts for me, all my gay friends.
Yeah, it seems like you probably love parts.
I love parts. I love parts. Are you kidding me? I'm addicted to parts.
But you don't rank them. You don't rank the parts. You just love parts.
Yeah. I'm not going to get into part politics here with you. I'm not going to get into the ranking because I don't want to ruffle the feathers of the gay ass podcast universe.
And why would you? And why would I even ask that? But I do think parts are, I love parts too. And
yeah,
I think it's actually fun to every chapter of our life, see which part speaks to us at which time. And it could be all of them or one more than the other.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, that being said, then, we want to get into your herstory because in many of your videos, you either show a dump truck ass shaking, you do a full split. So I want to know, how did Evan become the Mulrooney he is today? Whose fault is it that you're pan? Who do we blame, babe?
We have so much from pop culture, from familiar, from art, and that gosh darn Barbra Streisand.
Damn it to hell, that fucking bitch.
You're at it again. No, honestly, I've thought about this question since I've been asked to be on the podcast. And there really is so much, and I'm so grateful. And I often get emotional thinking about it. I'll get into the emotional side of it. But my father is a very worldly man, and he exposed me to a lot of art, queer and otherwise, and different music sensibilities, and taking me to art museums, and exposing me and my brother and my sister to as much as he could to show us what is out there, and. So many things excited me, and if there was a movie I could point to that I would say there's two like pop culture things that I think I can really point to. One, and I don't know which one came first, but I saw the movie Party Monster. Do you know that one?
I haven't seen it, but I've seen the VHS.
Sure. With Seth Green and Macaulay Culkin. And it is this, like, I've rewatched it recently because I was like, this is such a big part of my
origin
story.
Oh my God, wait.
Story.
It's also Chloe Sevigny. It's Wilmer Valderrama, Natasha Lyonne, Wilson Cruz, Dylan McDermott, Marilyn Manson.
Yeah. It's Marilyn Manson plays a wild part in it. That's all I'll say about that. And Natasha Lyonne plays like a small part. It feels like a bit part. And I remember watching that and feeling so enamored by it. And so like also at the same time being like, I shouldn't like this, but I love it. You know, I'm from Wilmington, Delaware, born and bred. And I was late in life coming out. And I felt, I guess we'll get into this with the football stuff, but... and I'll just say it just felt like, why am I so attracted to this? And like, and that was, no, I'd seen clips of RuPaul before at the VMAs. That's a clip that stands out in my mind when she comes out and she goes, Shantae. And she's, oh my God, it's, That was a big one. But yeah, seeing Party Monster was like world shaking, and understanding what ketamine was at an early age and going, huh.
You're giving us so many Easter eggs, though, because I am going to ask about the RuPaul of it all. I am going to ask about the football of it all. But
sure.
I want to dive into why it felt so like I should not be liking this, but I am. Because Party Monster, from what I'm reading, is Macaulay Culkin, it says, is the drug-addled king of the club kids. So it's basically, I guess, in the sort of era of the club kids. And the fact that Macaulay Culkin, I think, going from Home Alone to this is very interesting because it's clearly him shedding the, like, kid actor sort of infantilizing himself. But it's like, it says it was Macaulay Culkin's first film in 9 years since he did Richie Rich. So,
and that's what it was. And I thought, this isn't right.
Yeah.
That boy should be in a home by himself, abandoned, not around all these gays. No, I'm kidding. That's not why.
Well, what's the Delaware of it all? Because were you identifying with the kids in this movie that were like either doing the wrong thing or being different? Like, did you feel a bit outsider-y growing up?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, last pop culture thing, and this was my like, flagpole in the ground that I was like, this is a moment that has truly stuck out for me and for my whole life, and it will. I remember I was like between 9 and 12 years old, and I was in my family room by myself, and I was flipping through the channels, and I stopped on the Liza Minnelli special. I remember watching her, and she like just finished up a number, and I went, wow, she is one hell of a performer. And like I said it out loud, and I was almost like, oh.
Wait, how old are you at this point?
I was like 10 or 12. And I went.
I'm just picturing you as a serious 10-year-old wearing your tiny size robe.
Damn, she's a hell of a performer.
I'm smoking a huge cigar.
Exactly. You've always been drawn to theatricality.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. Big performances. People that are very... loudly themselves. I've always loved that. And you know what also has surfaced recently from the family archives of the Mulrooney clan is there's a video of me jumping on a bed. I must have been like 4 or 5, and I must have just found out what the word gay was. And I kid you not, Eric, I'm jumping on the bed and I'm singing, I'm gay, I'm gay, I'm really, really gay. And I saw this a couple months ago, and I started crying, and I was like, wow, this kid knew something. Isn't that wild?
I mean, I have chills. I have chills.
Thank you. That's art, baby.
And baby, that's art. Because in a way, what's so chilly willy about it is that at 4 years old, you weren't saying, I'm gay and it's bad. I'm gay and
I know.
You were saying, I'm gay, I'm gay, I'm gay, and I'm okay. Like you were celebrating.
I was doing
it.
The rich man's fruit.
Yeah, you were giving Fosse. And I think that's a testament to your fucking parents. And if we do shout out your dad who gave you the love of artistry, why do you think that your dad in Delaware of all places was able to be like, listen, I'm a guy in Delaware, but I'm going to let my kids fall in love with the broad spectrum of humanity and not just sports or manly shit, quote unquote.
Wow. That is really making me emotional. I kind of lost the question, but he put his foot down. I mean, he's just such a lover of art and a lover of people, and wanted to share with us that. Oh my gosh, this is unexpected, and I'm just so grateful to be able to talk about this and to know where I come from, and to know how hard I've worked on coming out and being out. And and that's what's beautiful about it, about my father, is that, you know, Delaware is obviously a liberal place, and some of his best friends are gay, and for whatever reason, Eric, I was like, this is inaccessible to me. I wish I could do that. But I think it was like the crews I fell in with that were very sport dominated. And up until like sixth grade, I acted out a lot. I got in trouble a lot. And then I hit a growth spurt in sixth grade and got good at football. I got large. And that's key number one to being pretty good in football, especially in a small place.
A lot of mass.
A lot of mass. And baby, we had it. In droves, we had mass. But football kind of straightened me out. And through football, and to touch back on your question, that's where it was like, that's what really introduced me to the patriarchy and this toxic masculinity and boyhood masculinity, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This very much like, it's me against the world. Keep it to yourself. Don't brag. You know, I often have, that was one thing I think that rubbed off on me from my father's upbringing was this like Catholic sense of guilt and don't brag about yourself. And I thought bragging was proclaiming who you are.
And it
felt very, not that I was raised Catholic. I was raised Episcopalian, which is like the gayest form of Catholicism.
Is it?
See, yeah.
I always get excited to learn about the different stereotypes because as a Jewess, I really don't know. So Episcopal is the gayest form.
Yeah, it's liberal Catholicism.
Thank God.
Yeah, there's a lot of gay and Michael C. Hall in 6 Feet Under is an Episcopalian, even though there is some homophobia in that they are much more accepted. One of my dad's best friends was a minister or whatever in an Episcopal church, and she's a lesbian. And I went to her wedding in a Catholic, or not a Catholic church. The Catholic church then burst into flame, so we had to go to the Episcopalian church next door. And that wedding was the first wedding I was ever high on pills at.
Oh, well, we want to get into
millions of other weddings.
We do want to get into the pills at weddings, but I also think it's important for us to shout out lesbian clergy members. I think say with my entire chest that the best religious leaders are rug-munching women, and I say that with pure respect and love.
Yes.
There is the huge gay synagogue in New York City, CBST. I think she just retired, but they're like big ol' rabbi star is a huge lesbian and a fucking icon. I also want to make sure, when I asked about your dad, I think that it's important. We shit on straight men a lot on this podcast because obviously with the patriarchy and a lot of the homophobia is basically from the straight men growing up. When I was growing up, most of my torture was done by straight men. And so we shit on them a lot. Absolutely. For very good reason. And when we hear about a good one, we need to make sure to shed light because there are great straight men in the world. While there are is a minority, your dad is one of them. And I want to thank him from the bottom of my gay ass heart for creating Evan and your brother and your sister.
It's
and
so kind.
Giving you the stage to step center and say, I'm gay, I'm really gay. Let us get into the footballing of it all. So
yes,
you obviously
please.
Had a lot of the macho-ness put into you through the football sport, but was there any secret dick being put into you behind the scenes, or were you the only queerdo on the team?
That's a great question. Not in high school. There has since been at least one teammate of mine who has come out, who I think is now married, who I still keep up with, and a couple other gay kids, as they're typically are in an all-boys private Catholic high school.
Sure.
More on that later. But no, was very, it was like little, it was always, people were always like, are you gay? And I'd be like, no, I have a girlfriend. Of course I'm not gay. And a lot of like people telling me, hey, like, you know, turn it down a little bit. I remember there was a party I was at that I was hosting, like a pregame. And unfortunately, they're now not quite in vogue, but I was blasting Village People. And oh. I was getting all the boys into it. And at a certain point, my girlfriend at the time was like, hey, she like grabbed me by the arm and was like, hey, can you like tone it down a little bit? And I was very offended by that because I was just having fun. I was just a guy having fun.
Was she being like, will you tone it down because you yeah, sound like
a fag? Enough of this. And there was also times, Eric, in like college where I was like, man, if it wasn't for fucking guys, I'd totally be gay. And like, I really stood by that.
Meaning then, that personality you wise, you like to sort of be expressive, which yes, is absolutely. Canonically gay. But you were like in the back of your, but in your head, you were like, but I don't actually want to fuck a guy, so I'm not gay.
Yeah, right. Because that wouldn't be cool amongst my peers. That wouldn't be accepted. And it was a constant. And it's so funny, like football is the fucking gayest. Football's so gay. And there's a lot of videos that I do that is about that. Like, hey.
No, I saw one recently about the NFL, like the people being interviewed talking about how they want to slap their teammates' asses.
And yeah, yeah.
It is. It's but it's constant. Also like wrestling too. My high school had a huge wrestling program it was just like so macho. But of course, deep down, it's like you're literally in lycra.
You're just rubbing.
Rubbing
and rolling, baby.
Were you... When you were jerking your girk in high school, was it all jerking off to women because that's what you were supposed to do? Or were you shamefully exploring other avenues in the privacy of your own brain?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a real hodgepodge upstairs. Yeah. And I think it, like, to really condition myself, I was just filled with so much shame. The worst part is that it was all societal shame.
Of course, yeah.
Being in the sports world, you know? And I kind of stopped myself from like really enjoying that. So it's been, unfortunately to say, a lot of deprogramming of that, and alongside of the deprogram of the patriarchy. The patriarchal views we share.
I just had this conversation. I always bring up therapy because it's truly the only thing that keeps me what? Yeah. Alive.
Oh.
Okay. And I had said to the therapist literally this morning, I was like, God, it's like such a shame that I have to deprogram myself essentially. And he was like, actually, what if you don't treat it as a shame, but just like a gift to be able to say, oh, that's... not my voice, and this is.
Yeah.
And how cool is it for me to be like, wow, I can see these thoughts pass by and then still be gay as hell, you know, and do whatever the fuck I want. So I think it's like a powerful reframing of like all the deprogramming we have to do is incredibly hard work, and I'm not taking away from that, but it is a gift to be able to say, this is who I actually am, and this is what I was told. When did you end up coming out as pansexual? When did you allow yourself to really embrace the queer side of you?
I came out in, it was like right after the pandemic, I think. I think that was a lot of time alone.
Yeah.
Well, I was living with an ex at the time, girlfriend, and I, you know, as you're sheltered in place, it's like, not only is there a big world out there, but there's so much that I want to explore. And I had made out with guys previously, at times, but never really gave myself the grace to take that next step because of what? Programming. And, and I remember going on walks with friends and being like, I just know I'm not straight. Like, it's not it. And to be quite frank, I was really teetering on like queer and bisexual for a while, but bisexual felt so kind of constrictive for me. And it leaves out a whole sea of people that I've been intimate with and have dated, and the pansexual connotation really resonated with me somewhat recently. And at first it felt like, it just felt too mythical, and it felt like too, like, I'm just going to say this so people don't go like, what's that? They're just like, okay.
Yeah.
But now I really quite feel strongly is that who I, well, I remember hearing the term first when I was a go-go dancer in Chicago and being like, huh. And it was like kind of an earworm. And yeah, I think I got checked into the box of bisexual for a while. And
wait, did you say you were a go-go dancer?
I was, yeah.
And in what settings?
In the settings of a gay bar called the Lucky Horseshoe in Chicago.
And you at the time, oh, I see. So you were like, okay, I'm go-go dancing at this gay bar. I'm showing them my goodies. And I am presenting and publicly identifying as a straight guy that's go-going at a gay bar.
Yeah. Great. And I felt like, I felt even more shame about saying I was straight, you know? And it was just like, because that felt so disingenuous for a long time.
Well, because you knew deep down that there were these opposing forces in you that were saying, I'm supposed to be identifying as one thing, I know the truth. And that's the whole thing about fucking growing up queer is we know what the truth is deep down. The world is telling us, ignore that, don't do that. And then we have to sort of grapple with the fact that hopefully one day we'll be able to be honest to the outside world and not just to ourselves.
Totally. May I ask you what it is that you're deprogramming? Like, what are some big things? And sorry to the universe out there who may have heard this previously, but Rundog wants a taste.
Rundog and open wide, baby, because great. my deprogramming is that similar to you, I was...
You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game. Delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Told that getting any attention at all was real fucked up. And I was told that not only being like, hey, is bad, but also like being low stress and happy was just not the part of being successful. Wow. The most important thing to be is successful professionally and also be so stressed out that you can't enjoy your one life, because that stress equals ambition, which equals value, meaning you have no value without a great career and a high amount of anxiety. I think that's my deprogramming, because I'm like, I'm literally talking about this every week in therapy. I'm like,
yeah,
told that like, okay, being too flashy and showy is bad. Too gay is bad. Talking about sex is bad. On the Substack series, we talk about sort of shame with hooking up, and I sometimes feel embarrassed that that's what I do, because I'm like, am I lowbrow? Which again is my own programming of like, am I not valuable because I'm not X, Y, and Z type of successful. So that's, I think that's the big thing, is like being too gay publicly. And I mean, that's really it, being too gay publicly. And then the work stuff is is a big thing of just like having to prove my value.
And it's the patriarchy that strikes again.
Yeah, it is.
For you know, falling into boxes and for presenting a certain way. So you feel like what's the word? Like not limited. You subdued yourself in being as gay as you want to be.
That's a good question, because not only did I subdue, what I've been working through is taking away the subduing and being really, really myself.
Great.
So that's been a huge win. But the thing that I've constantly continuing to work through is not feeling pangs of panic inside. Like, I look at your videos that you post, for example, and I'm like, he's being so effortlessly himself. Like, people comment, I think I wrote one down. People were like, were you high when you wrote this? There's, you know, people seeing like your intrusive thoughts coming out. Like, all I want to do is to be able to put shit out there that feels like my intrusive thoughts. It feels like my authentic shit that I'm not overthinking, but I'm deep down my thoughts are moving a mile a minute, and I'm constantly overthinking how I'm projecting myself, and I'm in a very, very, very new chapter of like, oh my God, not only do I know everything is going to be okay, but I also know that it is okay to like be exactly what I am, like put out shit and not worry that if it, like, a video doesn't do well, then who gives a fuck, because it's not a comment on my value. So like, it's, that's what I want. And in fact, if I may ask you,
please,
about your videos. You have so many out-of-pocket, beautiful, insane things. In fact, there's a video that you talk about, like, you know, there's a corn farmer. Are you for him or against him? And you say, you're all foreskin. And then you have a whole monologue about your foreskin.
As we do.
Because I'm a creative and also a fan of yours, can I just ask, like, your creative process for creating a video like that? Are you writing these out under the influence of pills? Are you improvising most of it and then feeling what hits and then doing a take where it's just the best parts? What are you doing, Evan Mulrooney, to make these videos so seemingly stream of consciousness?
Well, first off, Eric Williams, I want to say that when you do put those things out, and when you do let the intrusive thoughts win, and when you do say, fuck it, proverbially, you're still going to have those thoughts. I still have those thoughts I posted one yesterday and maybe it didn't perform the way I wanted it to. And I'm like, am I losing it? Do I suck? Do people hate me?
Yeah.
My rallying cry, my North Star is always, did it make me laugh? Is it going to make my friends and family laugh? Did I put something out that I stand by? And if those three are yes, then that's a win. And that's what you have to determine for yourself. And as such a effervescent, and you're so effortlessly yourself too. I'm having such a wonderful time speaking to you. And I feel like this is a kismet conversation that I really do not think that you, I know for a fact you cannot lose. I look forward to seeing those things. Now, if you wouldn't mind, I would love to get back to myself. Jesus Christ.
Enough about these
journalists.
Jesus.
Well, to answer the writing side of things, yes, I'm on a heavy, heavy cycle of barbiturates and benzos, and not to mention all the crazy juice I'm pumping through my ass. No, I'm not on... I'm not really drinking. You know what I'm doing right now? I'm on a caffeine cleanse. Talk about feeling like I'm going crazy.
Oh, yeah. Jesus.
I need to get back on it to get some thoughts juiced up. But it really starts with, it'll be like one thing. It'll truly be one line that I think of. Like, there's one with the foreskin one, it was so fucking ridiculous to talk about these things. It's like, yes, my art.
Yes,
so with my
foreskin one.
So that one, I was really troubled. Because I have so
That's
much
actually
foreskin.
About capitalism.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I always joke about. It's like, oh, well, you know, that one's, it's actually about late stage capitalism.
It's a comment on the Weimar Republic.
Yeah. So that one's more of Reaganomics. But It'll be like with the Forsian one, I thought, are you for him or against him? And I was probably just thinking about Forskin before that. And then wordplay is fun. But like also, I think the character that I do where I walk up to the camera and say a bunch of awful shit, that all started from the first video I posted of that was the Ash Wednesday video. Not the Ash Wednesday. Like, I'm talking like this is fucking canon. There was a video I posted on Ash Wednesday. And the only idea I had about it was that a guy who thinks Ash Wednesday is bumping lines of Ash. And is like hopped up like he's on coke, but it's Ash. And I got my brother to hold a camera in front of his home. And I said, can you just record this? And I got in his fireplace and put ash all over my nose and then walked up to the camera and then pretty much improvised the rest. A lot of the time I like kind of fuck up in it and I roll with it. There are times where it will take a couple of takes, but for the most part, in terms of improv and written, I would say like I'll write one line and then I'll write a couple other lines and then probably find a few while I'm in there. So maybe like 60 or 70 to 40, 30 written versus improvised. But a lot of it is,
you get the seed of an idea, you then flesh it out a bit and then allow yourself to run free and then the magic is created. I think that makes a lot of sense because you are really able to bridge the gap of great writing with like really silly improv. In fact, you have another video that you did during Pride Month, and you had some people that were commenting some really thirsty things. Cheyenne Jackson said, I can smell this video, which I thought was kind of picturing you and Cheyenne in the same room was a fun thought experiment. Yeah. Murray Bartlett, one of the hottest men on the planet, commented a couple of emojis. Let's run with that idea. If you and Murray Bartlett are in the same room, what happens?
We take our shirts off and we have a push-up contest. We laugh about how many push-ups we did together. We lost count a long time ago because we've been giggling and rolling on the floor laughing as two lads do. And then we have a very serious conversation about late stage capitalism and why the Australian economics are stronger, why the Australian dollar will be stronger than the American dollar in a couple months here.
Wait, don't stop. I'm almost there. Keep going.
And then our mustaches touch. And then we talk about our mustache routine. God, his mustache. It's truly my inspiration. He's such a kind guy. He's so cool.
I've talked about him on the podcast a few times. There was another Substack episode with Matt Risch. He is a fellow actress, and he did Looking with Murray Bartlett.
Oh, my God,
He was talking about how amazing Murray is, so I had to make sure to ask him about that. But you also did these videos with RuPaul. It would be against my religion to not ask about the BTS.
It would be against Judaism.
Yes. Against Judaism is the name of my next one-man show.
Oh, my God.
I'm stealing it from you now.
Yes, of course.
I need the BTS from the videos of RuPaul from the top, Evan. How did it happen?
I don't know if I'm allowed to get into too much details about it.
Oh, because there's maybe something down the line that we are not allowed to know about.
I can neither confirm or deny nor say anything about it. I am a law-abiding citizen.
I will respect those boundaries. So you basically found yourself in a room with Rue and the rest is herstory.
Yeah. I was approached. It felt all very unreal. It felt very scammy at first. I got DM'd on TikTok, which I'm not very huge on TikTok. I'm not very big at all on TikTok. By someone who is a friend of RuPaul's, and then one thing leads to the next, and I'm hanging out with the absolute matriarch of it all, and I will say I was so, I mean, enamored for many, many reasons, but mostly impressed by just how enthusiastic RuPaul is about creating things. And he doesn't need to be making videos. He doesn't need to have an awesome Instagram.
No.
But he does, and it's so good. And it's this, talk about someone who has killed the judge in their head and has truly let it rip since, I don't know, 1985.
Yeah.
I'm sure some bumps along the way, but for the most part, just like has absolutely been like, yeah, I'm gonna do it like this. And it's like, and you know, the roots being in punk rock. And the through line has been exactly that. Like, for RuPaul to bring me on to some podunk. Yeah, podunk. Delaware's not podunk. First off, honey. How dare honey, you say that? but like, yeah, to say like, oh, I like this guy. Come on, let's do something. That's like as punk rock as it could be. Because I'm sure people would advised otherwise, but
well, I think Rue probably. I know that Rue connected with you because of, again, your ability to put shit out that just feels so specific to you.
Yeah,
and I think that is what Rue has obviously done. And you're right that RuPaul has lived a life of creating, period. And I think that there are certain people that are put on this earth. I do think you, I do think I am a part of this. I think there are people who, whether we want it or not, are people who need to fucking just like make shit, whether it's silly or deep or not. It's just like we have that illness of needing to create and tell stories and boop, 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 ba, 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 ba. And I think Rue hasn't allowed the world to tell him to not create because he doesn't fit.
Absolutely.
Period. And so I think that's the exact theme that we're talking about, which is like saying, just fuck it. Let's put it out there because it'll feel good to us. What do you feel then in this current state? Because you're obviously doing really cool things as a creator with these videos, but also mazel tov on being in the studio. You have a great scene with Seth Rogen.
Oh, thank you.
that is the show that won the most awards in the recent Emmys. You shoot Jason Schwartzman in Fargo, giving us Mob Guys. what are we manifesting creatively and professionally for you? Can you give us sort of like what we would like professionally to happen with you when it comes to mixing your creative stuff with your career?
Yeah. It is just to think that a lot of this momentum has come from truly just like saying a bunch of stupid shit into an iPhone. And
yeah.
then,
yeah.
And I got a huge shout out to iPhone. I'm so excited for that company.
they're really doing some important, exciting
they're
work.
Very punk rock. I would say it's being in a place to create my own stuff. I love acting. I think that is always the goal first and foremost. Like that's another thing about this Instagram stuff and social media stuff is that all of it is just like a means to be a working actor. And I'm such a passionate dork for acting. I love it. I'm obsessed with it. And would love to be in a series regular in something where, you know, I'm the gay football coach with the heart of gold or what have you. And then be able to get my bag and produce my own things with friends, with people whom I love and people whom I admire. I spent a lot of my adult life in Chicago, and that's where I came out, and that's where I found my people, my chosen family. And I think it's a sin that there isn't more done in Chicago. There are so many brilliant people coming out of there all the time. There's so many brilliant people there.
Oh, my God,
there.
Yeah. So
and,
many.
Yeah, and it's, I think it's a real crime against the entertainment that we're not letting people do stuff there or giving people the opportunity to do stuff there. And then also the artistic cultural epicenter that is Wilmington, Delaware. We gotta get Hollywood out there,
they
baby.
Say it's the third coast.
It's the third coast. The third toxic coast. From a chemical standpoint, not
chemically speaking. You know, yeah, are you a Los Angeles king these days?
Yeah. Where are you at?
I'm also Los Angeles.
Ah!
We'll talk deets soon.
Oh, we will talk deets. So you know, it's funny that you say all this because I, too, am an acting dork. And I literally started this podcast because I was unemployed during the pandemic. And I did not like being the, can I say stepchild? Is that mean against stepchildren? I just think that I was really fucking tired of basically having zero ownership over my own fucking career. And I feel like actors historically are just like waiting for the audition and then crossing their fingers, they get the call back, and then crossing their fingers, they book it. And then after they book it, crossing their fingers for the next audition. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. I am not getting as many of those auditions. And also I just know that there's a lot more energy I have to be put out elsewhere versus waiting. So all this to say, a lot of it is in a weird way for me, it was a means to do more acting. And now that I've been really putting my whole pussy into this, I'm like, oh, maybe like I will continue to pursue acting, but also do more hosting shit and personality shit, because like, absolutely, you know, the world is our oyster and we are allowed to take the winds as they come and let that guide us. And oh, I think that you are very much doing that as well.
Good for you. Well, to that point, I admire the hell out of you for doing this and building it out the way you've done, brick by brick, as they say. And it really is such a beautiful thing too, because the through line of this conversation, it's, you know, the choice to proclaim your free will, right, as an actor. And what's beautiful about art is that if we can harness that same fuck it attitude, that same bootstrap attitude, to our own identity, to ourselves, and like the choice to proclaim who we are, the choice to say enough of this deprogramming, which is so hard and such a bigger task than just saying like, no, I'm not going to listen to that. But it really, I mean, that's what is the difference maker, right? Is really proclaiming that and like taking up that space and being like, yeah, I'm part of this. Like, you know, with your, we have similar deprogramming with identifying as pan. There's a lot of the times where it's like, oh, I'm not queer enough. And it's like, fuck that. Yes, I am. I'm at High Tops. I'm at Precinct. I ingest queer art daily, hourly. And it's like, of course I am this. Why would I limit myself from being who I am? And it is, sadly for me, I don't know if this is you, because of fear of judgment, of course. And you know, I'm sorry that I'm a feminist, but I really point fingers at the patriarchy. And I really am really trying to, as Bimini Bamboo Lash would say, dismantle the patriarchy, smash the patriarchy. And that's what we're doing. And I applaud you for everything you're doing. And
well,
I'm a big fan.
Thank you. And I feel the applause. You can applaud with
you
both of your hands.
Applause.
I appreciate that, Evan. And I do want to get us to the final podcast question before we flip over for a quick Substack moment. And Evan, the final gay ass podcast question is, if the world was ending, you could only save one character actress, who would you save?
Gary Oldman. that is an answer, but my real answer is, of course, the incomparable, the unstoppable, the sensational, the cunty, Margot Martindale.
Oh, Margot.
Just heads
God
above
damn,
the rest.
She really is. And I think that the second you said her name, I'm not joking, I had a vision of you being with her on set.
Oh my God. I would, I would kill Gary Oldman for that. That's how much.
Sorry,
I want
Gary.
That.
He had it coming.
You're out. Slow horses. Wild well, good.
Not wild good. Not. Yeah, we're not going to unfortunately save you because Margot deserves to live. Yeah. Will you do me a favor when you are on set with Margot? Will you tell her that you brought up her name on a gay ass podcast?
Oh my God, that'll be the first thing I say to her. I won't even introduce myself first.
Margot.
Margot. I said your name.
She is a gorgeous answer, and every single one of your answers on this episode has, I'm not just buttering your biscuit, it has been such a fucking delight, and I just want to celebrate you living your queer truth, your delicious, hairy, chested truth, your denim, shorted, big booty realness, Evan. Keep it up, and please tell these gorgeous listeners where to follow you, and if there's anything you would like to plurg.
Oh my God, we're plugging. I'm plugging myself with awesome toys daily. I'm so smitten to be here, and I'm floored. You're a terrific interview.
Thank you.
And you have such a talent for this. Okay, again, can I plug myself? Jesus Christ, Eric.
Plug.
I'm on Instagram, RuneDawg, spelled DAWG, _ first of his name. It's a tough name to plug. it's such a mouthful. I'm at RuneDawg, _ first of his name on Instagram and TikTok. And a few more episodes of Only Murders in the Building is coming out.
Yes.
And, I will be in a few of them, and I'm really excited for people to see it. And you know what else I want to plug? A friend's show of mine just came out on Netflix, Haunted Hotel.
Oh, yeah. Let's plug Haunted
Hotel. We're plugging. Double thumbs it up and check it out.
All right, y'all. We are plugging voices. Our friend's shit. We are plugging Evan's gorgeous shit on Only Murders in the Building. We are linking all of that in the description. Go follow Evan and go to Substack to hear the rest of this chat. We love you. We love you, Evan. Mm. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining me on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. If you enjoyed this interview with Evan Mulroney, there are 10 more minutes of juicy, horny questions over on Substack, which is links in the description. You will also find this week's bonus episode with Coach Kevin Martin. Y'all, he's a gay sex coach and content creator, so you can get great advice from him and then watch him jerk it on the internet. Hello. I asked many questions about that journey over at Substack, and you can also watch me go live with a chat tomorrow, Thursday, with Sean Galanos. He has a Substack called The Love Drive, an amazing Instagram. He's a straight hottie, and he's going to ask me all of his questions without fear of being canceled. No cancellation on that live. So yeah, there's a lot going on this week, and I'm, as always, so grateful that you are here. But please, do me one more favor. And stay gay.
You've been listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, hosted by me, Eric Williams. If you want to see and hear more, make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and follow the Instagram at Gay Ass Podcast. For more gay assery, the real girlies are over on Substack, where you get bonus episodes every single week and live chats with me and other gay ass guests. That's a Gay Ass Podcast is executive produced by Eric Williams and produced by Nathaniel McClure. We'll see you next week.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.